Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
This show has no filter. Really cool tweet just came in. You can tweet at me at John Canzano BFT from Silent H-Man. Great discussion regarding the principal in her post. Love your show. I'm always impressed with the genuine takes and real adult conversations that you have. I mean, that's part and parcel. That is, the callers of the show are smart. I always say the people in the show that call into the show and listen to the show are smarter. They're better looking. And they're successful. Frank Borkowski listens to this show. He's all of those things. How are you, man?
Good, Johnny. How you doing?
Doing well. Doing well.
I'm not in that group. I know that. Good looking, smart. I'm waiting for the punchline.
Hey, when you were in the league, Twitter and Facebook, that wasn't something you had to worry about. Are you glad that that's the thing of today's NBA player and not your era?
Well, more importantly, I'm glad not everyone had a camera, because we'd go out and tear it up and have fun, and there might have been a camera in the club because there was a birthday party in the back. But the scrutiny the players are under now is just mind-boggling.
Let's talk Damian Lillard. He's been on fire. He'll suit up again tonight. He's good for 40 or 50, I'm sure. What are you seeing out there?
I got a text from Pop this morning. Coach Popovich is a really close friend of mine, and he said, "Are you coming to the game to watch Damian score 50 on us?" When you have Bob worried about Damian, you know something's up. But Damian's an anomaly. I actually called you to come on because I'm so moved by Damian and what he's doing. And take away the 50, 60-point games. Take away the performance. Take away all that. The person he is as a superstar, we don't see in the NBA. We don't see people handling success like this with the maturity and the caring that he has for the game in the city of Portland. I think they should put a statue of him up. I don't think we won't see a player like this come along and not be affected by his fame and his wealth and his influence, right? So I can't say enough about Damian Lillard.
It's unusual to see a guy, too, that's happy to be in a small market, wants to be a lifetime guy here. And, you know, I think that says a lot about him. Maybe it's the Weber State in him and the Oakland, and there's loyalty there. As a player, like, they're across the league, all these guys are sensational athletes. What sets him apart as a competitor and athlete?
His heart, his drive, the intangibles we don't see, the struggle he had coming up. I mean, I've read his story because I'm so curious about him, and I'm pretty close with him. I don't try and be friends with players I work with or teams I have, but Dame I consider a friend and care deeply about him because he cares so much about the city. I mean, I don't know that Portland understands how lucky they are to have this superstar. And I have to mention CJ in the same breath. We have two remarkable individuals that are performing at a really high level, and they don't care to go to the big markets. They don't care to cash in. They're cashing in, trust me. They're getting theirs, but they're not these kids who want to go to the big market and want more and more and more and more and more. They're here, and they love Portland, and they care about the fans. I'm rambling, but Dame's like a heavyweight prize fighter. One good one comes along every 15 or 20 years, and this is what I think of him.
It's remarkable to see him here. I want the Blazers to get the right pieces around him. How far away do they feel to you with the guys who are injured if they come back? How many moves away are they from making a run, possibly?
Well, boy. You know, they're clicking now. They had a bad loss the other night, but that's just one game. Who cares? They're clicking. Terry's doing a job of keeping them clicking, keeping them on the same page. So, you know, it's just Trevor Ariza I love. I think he's a great addition. It's hard to say, Johnny. I wish I had a better answer for you, but it's like when they fall into place, they fall into place. And Terry's done a remarkable job of getting them ready the last year or two for the playoffs. You know, and I think failures produce that. When you go to the playoffs and you fail, you come back with an urgency that you can only get from failing. And you know, you look at Dame's childhood and the guns and the violence and his mom and all that has produced this kid.
When I look at the sort of the aging of a player, and this is something all players go through, you know, Damian Lillard's 29. He'll turn 30 this summer. How many good years does he have left? And he may be different than the average player, but what do you think that career span will be for him?
I think he'll go deep into his 30s. I think he's got a lot left. I don't think he's beat up. I think he plays a game where he doesn't get beat up so bad. In the NBA nowadays, you know, I would have beat the crap out of Dame back in the day. He comes to the Hall, Steph, any of those guys would have paid a price. They don't have to pay that price anymore. So to answer your question, he'll go deep into his 30s and be, you know, Jerry West said the best years of a player's life are the 28 to 32 to 34 and some. And I think Dame will go beyond that. He's just got a knack. I mean, after that shot last year against Paul George, I can't tell you how affected I was. I've never seen nothing like that. And for him not to pound his chest or do what everybody seems to do to call attention to himself, he just walked off the court and waved goodbye. And I sat with him the next day or maybe a couple days later. I said, Dame, what does it feel like to turn the sports world globally upside down? Because everybody, every fan in the world was talking about that shot. It was spectacular. I still get goosebumps thinking about it. And you know, I love what Dame said about Paul George's comment. He says it was a bad shot, and Dame said it was bad D.
Frank Prakowski with us. Longtime NBA big man, Seattle, the Lakers, the Spurs, the Bucks, the Hornets, the Kings.
All right.
What do you think of the range the players are showing? Because we've seen Steph Curry expand range. Dame's done it now. I saw LeBron the other night, took a long three. He airballed it, but you could see that he's kind of toying around with, all right, where is my range? We are seeing range now from these players that did not exist before. Why do you think that is?
I just have to say it's talent, it's evolution, it's whatever it is, but like, It amazes me, the range. Dame pulls up, you know, 10 feet outside behind the arc and makes them. In my day, if you took that shot and made it, you're sitting down. You would get in big trouble for taking that shot, let alone missing that shot. And, you know, I like what Terry said last year when Dame took the shot. He said, I didn't care. I didn't care what he did. He's my best player. He has the ball. He can do whatever he wants. And that freedom allows the confidence to build and to be able to execute and take those shots. You know, when you have a green light, I had a green light a couple years in the league just meant I could do what I wanted with the ball. Now, that doesn't mean take those shots, but that adds to your confidence. When you know you can take a shot like that and not get pulled for missing it, that's the magic of it, getting that confidence.
You talked about making a guy pay when he drove. Give me an example of making a guy pay.
I think I've used this story before. We were in Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals against Utah when I was with Seattle. And I get put in the game. I'm 37 years old at this point, and John Stockton, who I never really liked, came in the lane. I'd go for the ball, but I'd lean with my elbows a little bit to make sure he knew I was there. And I caught him in the eye, gave him 11 stitches. And he was walking off the court yelling at me, saying, that's all you can do, Brick. That's all you can do anymore. I said, yeah, but I'm still pretty good at it. Go fix your eye.
And you didn't get a flagrant for that. That's just a foul.
It was a good hard foul. It was basketball. That's the play. You know, when you go out in the playground, there are no flagrant fouls. You know, the way Damian grew up, the way I grew up, they're different but the same. You know, my dad dragged me over to the black neighborhoods to play basketball, and I was scared out of my pants. But you learn how to play an honest game. I think the NBA struggles with the refs protecting so many players when we policed our game. If you talk smack to somebody, you either answered or you took a shot. You either answered or you didn't. I mean, Larry Bird gave Chuck Daly a forearm shiver for talking, you know, too much smack as a coach. And that's what players, that's what fans want to see. They want to see some little, a little bit of the hockey in basketball, right?
Yeah, and I don't mind. I like that physical game. I like the game that we saw, like, you know, when the NBA of the 90s, really, right?
Right.
Hey, Brick.
Yeah. No.
Let me ask you this.
Go ahead,
trade deadline. We see all these trades going on. What's the locker room like amid, you know, the times when people don't know who's coming and who's going? You got to suit up and play.
You know, at first, it's disconcerting at best, right? But then after you get traded the first time, after you have a teammate, a friend traded the first time, it hurts, right? It's like no one wants to be rejected. No one wants to lose a friend or a team that you cared about. But after a while, it's just a business, right? And after my first time I got traded, I put in a no-trade clause in every contract I signed where I'd make a certain bump if I got traded. So, you know, you get traded and you make $250,000, it's like, it doesn't hurt so bad. but it's tough, you know? It's like you're packed up, the moving trucks show up, and you're playing the next day or 2 days later. So it just becomes part of the job. You know, you look at a lot of these jobs these guys do are policemen. You know, how do they stand the stress of not knowing what's around the corner? They get used to it. It becomes part of their daily existence. It's the same for NBA players.
What do you think of what Andre Iguodala did in Memphis? He sat out, took the paycheck, got traded, got a raise. Some people are praising it. Other people are saying, come on, you sign a deal, you got to show up to work.
You know, I struggle with it, too, because I think, you know, our players shouldn't be criticized for having authority or power to do what they want. I admire his play. I admire what he did. Is it fair? It's the system, right? And he worked the system. So, you know, kudos to him, you know. So it's hard. He's an executive committee member on in the organization I work for. So I support him no matter what he does.
Right.
And he got what he wanted, and he has the power to do it, and, you know, I praise him.
You know, you came and went with Seattle a couple of times, and you had, of course, that tour with the Lakers, but you developed a little bit of a three-point shot towards the end of your career, right? I mean, you started shooting that shot better.
Yeah, it was a set shot. It wasn't a jump shot, we know that. But yeah, I mean, the three-point in the corner was the shortest three-point shot you could take, and that was an easy, easy shot for me. And you know, I moved out a little further, but I was always a pretty good shooter. And it's just practice; it's just repetition, is all it is.
Is that something where a coach said, "Hey, Brick, you're going to have to develop this," or did you kind of see the game going that way? You started to get up into your 30s, later 30s. You said, "All right, I got to develop a shot," and you work on it in the off season.
Yeah, every year I would pick a weakness. And I'd say, I'm not coming back with that weakness, right? Whether it was shooting, whether it was driving with my left or using both hands down low. I love watching this kid in Denver, the big kid, because he's so multi-skilled and he's great at everything. He really is. Where I was good at most things, you know, I could hit the three, I could shoot the mid-range, I could post up down low, use both hands, I could drive both ways, which made it hard to guard me. If I played against Shaq, I knew what I had. I was shooting over jump shots. If I played against a smaller guy or guard my size, I could bring him down low and exploit whatever advantages I've had or I had. And that's what I was doing. You know, okay, I see the game. I want to stretch. I want to be valuable. I'll develop the longer range shot so the big guys have to come away from the basket. So it's just kind of common sense to me, but you don't see a lot of guys doing that.
Kobe Bryant, we're now more than a week removed from that helicopter accident, but I keep thinking about him as a dad. I really like who he became as a father.
Yeah, it impacted me really, really. It was hard for all of us, right? We were on a four-hour grief call with my office or our staff, you know, our player program staff. So it was 6X players, 7X players that were really affected, and it kind of caught everybody off guard. I had a relationship with Kobe for 30 years. And I knew him as, you know, that little cantankerous prick that came in the league and didn't want to hear anything from anybody, and watched him grow into a mature, responsible, respectful man. And that's what I missed. It's like, I didn't acknowledge that to him. We lose somebody and we all have regrets of not saying what we should have said. And I wish I could have said that to him. Right.
It's tough because
It's tough to talk about.
Yeah, in you know, Akobi as a player, he was never on my team. He was always that guy that destroyed my team. I always rooted against him. But in the end, the thing that just shook me up was when I looked at his wife's social media pages and I saw, gosh, this guy was a great dad. And those little girls are not going to have their father. And of course, there were three little girls on that helicopter who died as well. It was heartbreaking.
Yeah, it rocked the world. It really did. It's still tough to talk about it because of all the good he did and how he competed and the example he set. And, you know, everybody can go on and on about it. And, you know, we just lost David Stern, too, who I had a close personal relationship with and had lunch with him over Thanksgiving. And, you know, it's just these losses build up the older you get. But, I was telling the office staff or our staff that when you get older and you lose somebody, it's one thing. But then you lose somebody your age and it's another. Then you lose somebody that's younger than you and it affects you differently. And to lose somebody at 41 that, you know, I cared about and had a relationship with, it gets harder and harder. You know, it's a tough deal, especially someone that you looked up to, someone you admired, so, you know, all those things. But it's life, right? And I'm always amazed how life just marches on, too. It just is relentless.
I came home and I hugged my kids a little tighter. I think a lot of us did that.
Yeah. How could you not? You know, it's like, I feel for the family, I feel for everybody involved, and it was just a global loss, you know, and on top of it, Tim McCormick, who's a co-worker of mine who played in the league for a long time, said it really pointedly in that this generation is their first really big loss. They've really never had a hero go down or lose somebody like this that meant so much to so many people. And I think that's what it was. It was the first generational loss that impacted so many people.
Brick, you're welcome on this show anytime. I appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me on, Johnny.
All right, there he is. Frank Borkowski, former NBA big man. If you're playing a pickup game with him, he'll make you pay a price. In the 1 o'clock hour, we are going to send a father and daughter to a Blazer game. Generous donor yesterday on the program called in when we had some Blazers center court seats for tonight's game against the Spurs. And that generous donor, Nick Eliotti, former Oregon defensive coordinator, bought the tickets and said he wanted to donate them to somebody who may not regularly have the chance to go to a game. Now, I thought, because we've been talking a lot about girl dads, that the tickets should go to a girl dad. And so, coming up in the 1 o'clock hour, we are going to solicit girl dads to call into the show, tell us why they should go to the game. There is a catch. I'm going to need proof of life when you go to the game. I want a photograph of you and daughter. Just snap something on your cell phone from the seats that we can tweet out and... ultimately, we can send a thank you to the generous donor of the tickets. And just because I just don't want you and your buddy going to the game and being like, well, my daughter couldn't make it. We had great seats, though. I really want to send a father-daughter combination to the game. We're going to do that in the 1 o'clock hour. So if you are a girl dad or you know a girl dad, text them and tell them to start listening to the show because we were going to send somebody to tonight's Blazers.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.